Hello and welcome to The Opening Bell, the Boxing News podcast. My name is Matt Christie and I'm utterly delighted to be joined by boxing royalty today. The former world featherweight champion and 2015 International Boxing Hall of Fame inductee, Prince Nassim Hamed, is sat opposite me. I kind of mentioned on Twitter this morning that you were coming in to do this podcast. And we've obviously had some questions. But first of all, how are you?
I'm good. It's good to be here. It's good to be back. I came last year and seen you.
Yeah.
Nice little conversation last time. But obviously this year's a different year. It's 2015 and there's a lot of things happening.
Yeah, there definitely is. We'll get round to the induction to the Hall of Fame shortly. But first of all, when I was growing up and I fell in love with boxing, you were a household name. You were, you know, the British boxing superstar. But to the people that maybe don't know you as well, just tell us a little bit about how you first got into boxing.
Well, it was plain and simple for me because I lived literally just up the road from a boxing club, and that was Brendan Ingalls Boxing Club, St Thomas's. And at the time, you had amazing fighters like Harold Bomber Graham come out of there.
Yeah.
And he was basically, really and truly, the focal point that we had as kids growing up, saying by the trainer, you know, you got to try and fight like this. So we're really, truly, we're all clones of Harold Bomber Graham, but some of us did our own thing.
Yeah.
And took it a step further and developed something else, and which I did. So, but that was at a mere age of like 7. So then by the time I got to the age of 11, in my eyes, I felt I was a professional because I'd been doing it for 4 years. I was that confident.
Yeah.
And in my first year as an amateur, I won a national schoolboy title, so I was already British champion at 11. So I was up and ready. I was ready to turn pro at 12.
Yeah.
So
you must look back really fondly at those early days.
I don't forget them. They're quite vivid in my mind about everything that really happened as an amateur. And it's funny, I mean, I remember all the 7 national titles that I won, everything in between, and really and truly from a very young age, it was just, you know, wishing your life away to get to 18.
Yeah,
just to turn professional.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to get to 18. And then suddenly, all of a sudden, I became 18 and it was in 1992 and I could have either stayed, well, in 1992 was the year of the Olympics in Barcelona.
Yeah.
And a lot of people thought I should have stayed for that. But I just could not wait to just become a professional.
Yeah.
And just because I knew that I didn't want nothing to hold me back. I remember predicting in a boxing magazine at the age of 11 saying I'll be world champion at 21.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that was, I can't remember exactly what it was.
Yeah.
I just remember having that dream of, and predicting at the age of 11, look, I'll be world champion and a multimillionaire. And by the time I got to 21, I boxed at a world title.
Yeah.
I was still really and truly disappointed that I wasn't able to fight for a British title, to be honest.
Yeah.
In my eyes, the best belt in boxing
and remains
the best belt in the world is the Lonsdale belt.
It's a lovely looking belt as well, isn't it? It's well over the heritage.
Belt.
Yeah, yeah.
So for all the fighters that have got one and won them outright, I mean, obviously we've got a few in from Sheffield, like Ryan Rhodes and Bill Brook.
Yeah.
They've won them outright. So,
yeah.
You know.
But despite that, you made an impact. There was a buzz about you as an amateur, I remember it. But I think one of the first times I saw you fight professionally was on the television. I think it was against Vincenzo Belcastro, which I think was 94. And I think it was at the European Super Bantamweight title.
It was the Bantamweight.
Was it Bantamweight? Yeah. Was it Bantamweight?
Yes.
Well, but I remember you got a bit of stick. People were saying you were a bit.
I got a lot of stick.
Because your antics. Did you drop Belcastro in the last round? You kind of stood over him. What's kind of going through your mind at that point? Are you, because now you're a placid guy in front of me, but when you've got someone knocked down and you're kind of screaming over him.
Well, in the whole of them times as a fighter, I was so different.
Yeah.
Being in the ring, then obviously out of the ring, I was a totally different person. I was a monster in that ring, and that's what you needed to be. But at that particular time, it was all them dreams of watching, you know, some of your favourite fighters, what they did in the ring, And that's what you normally do. You seem to get to a point in your career where you've seen so many great fighters do what they did in their career, and then all of a sudden it comes to your point of a certain fight, of a certain title fight, and you want to start doing certain stuff, and that's exactly what it was. I mean, I'd watched this video called AKA Cassius Clay
for a long
time. It must have been over 15 years. I mean, every single day. So in my decade of winning. And obviously, like I'm saying, I won that European title at the age of, I don't know, 19, 20 years old in 94, 20.
Yeah.
It was early stages, and to win a European title before a British title is really unheard of.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the title that I could fight for. Fancy being able to fight for a European title and win a European title against a European champion that was world class.
He was really experienced, wasn't he?
Very experienced. That fought for a world title, but not able to fight for a British title. So, but at them times, it was through the fight. It weren't just the last round. It was through the fight. It looked like I was very, very, I won't say arrogant, very confident, supremely confident. Yeah. And even the last round, when I came out in the 12th round for the European title fight, it looked like the first round, because I had that much energy in the 12th round, and I was just dancing knowing that this guy wasn't going to really go, he wasn't going to get knocked out. But I dropped him about three times.
Yeah. So well, you did. I don't think there's any exaggeration saying you completely outclassed him. And I think that fight gave people a real glimpse into, kind of, number one, your potential, number two, your ring character.
Yeah.
And number three, the fact that you probably were going to go on to rule the world. When you did do that against Steve Robinson, again, Robinson comparatively far more experienced than you. Few people are also, a few doubters saying, well, maybe Steve Robinson might be a bit too much. You were absolutely flawless that night. Were there any, when you're going into a fight, when you're fighting for the world title, as confident as you appeared, were there any nerves kind of bubbling under the surface?
I had people with me through the whole of that fight, before the fight, the week of the fight, and the day of the fight. And when I say people, I mean close, like people from the gym, and obviously me trainers and John Ingle and whoever that was with me that night, knowing that I was going to be world champion that day. There was no doubt in my mind. There were no doubts that even crept in. And I suppose that's one thing that was good about me. The minute that you get them kind of doubts within your career, and the minute things just peer in of any kind of doubt, it's not a good sign. I didn't have anything like that. Mine was as strong as anything in regards of self-belief, the will to win. There was just no doubt in my mind, even though I'd see him on TV and I think, boy, he's a big guy.
Yeah.
Steve Robinson's a big guy. I mean, he's like cut to shreds, and he looks very, very strong, and you know, he's world champion and defended his title I don't know how many times, quite a few times.
Yeah.
But looking back on it now, I mean, and having some interviews that I've had recently, it's still a bit of an amazement to know that I wasn't even a featherweight when I fought for the featherweight title, for the featherweight championship of the world.
Yeah.
I don't know any fighter that could actually walk into the ring as a super bantamweight and fight for a weight above himself for that world title and win it in that kind of fashion. So I just thank Frank Warren so much that it was him that said to me, do you want to fight Steve Robinson for the world title? I said, do I want to fight? Of course I want to fight Steve Robinson. What do you mean, do I want to fight?
Yeah.
He's a featherweight. He's a featherweight. I'm knocking out heavyweights in the gym. I'm knocking out middleweights. It doesn't really matter who it is. At 21, I wanted to be world champion, and Frank Warren got me that opportunity, and I'll never forget Frank Warren for that.
Yeah.
Just giving me the opportunity, knowing that he had both of us, so he couldn't lose anyway.
He had Steve.
And he did an unbelievable job with Steve. He kept him out of trouble in my eyes before he bumped into trouble against me. So no, it was an unbelievable run just to be 21 years old.
Well, that's my next question. I mean, kind of most of us mere mortals, when we're 21, we kind of just get into grips with adulthood. You were world champion, suddenly a household name. What is that kind of fame? What is that kind of fame like? And how did you cope with it at the age of 21?
It's really, I can't believe how so many people say to me, you know, about this fame aspect all the time. I personally never really saw myself as this famous guy. And it's possibly because, I don't know, I was brought up in a certain way and my feet was always on the ground. And even until today, there's that many people that still come up and still say, you know, you made my, I had so many great memories in the 90s and whatever.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, you're a superstar and all that. And I'm not just saying this. I feel that the fame never really hit me. And going out to all these different celebrity bashes that you can go to, I wasn't really interested in going to. I still aren't.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I know there's some fighters that will go to an opening of an envelope.
Yeah.
I'm cool in the gang doing my own thing. And that whole era of being noticed and recognised on the street, yeah, that did happen. But the whole thing of it, the feeling, what was the feeling like? It was a good feeling. I'm not going to say it wasn't a good feeling. It's a good feeling walking around the planet for 5-6 years as a world champion.
Yeah.
Getting out of bed every morning for years, not for a couple of weeks or a month, but for quite a few years, waking up every morning and going to the gym and going out and going on holiday and whatever and being with your wife and kids and know that you're a world champion. It's an amazing feeling, and I'm sure that the fighters today who are world champion are feeling that.
Yeah.
But that can only last for a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
And it, for me, it did last quite a while, and I enjoyed it big time while it did. So what can I say?
Would you, because I think it's fair to say that your feet are more firmly on the ground now, do you in a way wish that you could have kind of the maturity and kind of the wisdom that you've got now and take it back to that point? Or do you think that was part of the magic with you, the fact that you were 21 years old and a world champion?
I go with you there. I honestly go. I mean, I was that confident. I was that much willing to let people know what I was going to do in the sport and who I was going to be. If I would have been a different person to who I was, I don't know if I would have been the same person to achieve the same things that I did.
Yeah.
So, no, I was a guy full of spunk.
Yeah, you went off.
I was ready.
Yeah.
I was ready, and I was willing to tell, and I just had it. I just wish so much. I pray to God that I just see somebody that ignites me with that kind of that passion and that confidence.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna really, really steer you off into a different thing right now, because there's only one guy right now that I was in Sheffield last week with my brother Ali, and my brother said to me, "Yeah, have you seen this guy in the UFC?" And I said to my brother, "I don't watch UFC. I don't like UFC." He says, "What do you mean you don't like UFC? It's fighting." I says, "I know. I don't really like the rules of UFC. Yeah, yeah. And I don't like the whole thing of it. I think it's a lot more dangerous than boxing."
Yeah.
And then he says, "All right, but listen, have you seen this fighter?" I says, "Ali, I'm not interested in UFC." He said to me, "Look, just watch this fighter with me today and let's see if you don't like UFC." Well, he showed me this Irish guy from Dublin called Conor McGregor.
Right.
Right. And I swear to God, this guy is a breath of fresh air. And this guy, in my eyes, is the most entertaining man in the whole of any combat sport there is today. So he's blazed out the whole of boxing. I mean, smashed it out of the water. This is a UFC fighter. He smashed up the whole of
the... Does he do a somersault into the cage?
Oh, no, listen. He's entertaining. Yeah. This guy, he says in his interviews, he don't only call the round. No, what was it? He don't just call the round. He calls the minute and he calls... I mean, the guy is a very confident guy. I like the way he fights. The guy used to be, obviously, after I've watched him, I've read up on him a little bit. And the guy used to be a national amateur champion. Yeah. And obviously, he'd grown up watching me. Some of his stuff that he does reminds me of when I was younger and what I used to do and how confident I used to be. Some of his way that he speaks and how confident he is and his the way he carries himself and... I want you to watch out for Conor McGregor.
I want you to watch
him and give me a call today, tomorrow, whatever. And you say to me, "Naz,
Because I've got to be honest, I'm not a big fan of UFC. That might be down to ignorance on my part.
No,
yeah, exactly.
Boxing.
I love boxing, but I will for you. But for you, I'll watch Conor McGregor.
Yeah, and I'm telling everybody out there.
Speaking of the confidence, speaking of something, we touched on it a second ago with the old somersault into the ring. How many times did you go arse over tit while you were perfecting that behind the scenes?
Right, I'm going to be honest now. Not very many. I swear to God, I can honestly
but
say
at least
to
once.
You, right, that I struggled a little bit more with what I used to do before that. And there was a fight that was televised. Well, I don't know if it was actually televised. I've got the video of it anyway. Where I did do, it was actually televised, I did do a vault over the rope. So I jumped over the rope,
yeah,
similar to what Chris Eubanks did.
Yeah.
There was that one time where it wasn't all right landing. I'm not going to say I fell on my face because I didn't. I fell on my feet, but it just didn't. The balance was completely wrong.
Yeah.
So I can honestly say there was that one time. Now, doing the flip over the rope, for me, was so much easier because all you'd have to do is you stand up there, make sure you're holding the ropes, you know, quite well and get the right grip on them. Because you didn't have, because your thumbs and the glove was like not attached.
Yeah, yeah.
You couldn't really put your thumbs right under the rope so you could grip it. So it meant balancing with your thumb and your fingers and pulling the rope back and pushing it down and giving you that thing of that force of just trying to do the flip over. With doing that, for me, was never ever a problem, and I never ever landed wrongly. And bearing in mind that I was doing this in world title fights. So to take the risk of actually falling over on your ankle or twisting your ankle or doing something wrong, I mean, that's what I'm saying. For me, it wasn't a risk. There weren't no risk. It was just about showing the whole crowd and showing the viewers that you could enter a ring like that because you was that confident of doing well and of winning. And
because you'd do that somersault into the ring and then you go running up to your opponent. They must be absolutely infuriated with you because you do that and they must be getting vexed. And then you beat them up afterwards.
Yeah, we use that term a lot in Sheffield, beating them up. We actually use that term. There's some people that don't get that term, beating them up.
Yeah.
But no, I'd like to do the flip and I'd like to just, you know, obviously the steps of them, of landing, there'll be obviously some steps after because sometimes it can be a little too much on the somersault or just right. Normally the landing, I'd try and make sure that the landing is quite perfect and quite safe.
Yeah.
If there's an extra few steps, it would send me in the direction of my opponent and
I'd have
a little good look at his eyes.
Yeah.
I'd love to look at my opponent's eyes before the fight, before we start flinging fists.
It was great to watch. You were always really confident. Was there anyone, out of all the guys you fought,
yeah,
was there anyone where you were not or you were a bit concerned that you thought, hang on, or when you looked into their eyes, hang on, I might not win this fight?
No, I never ever got that. The only fight, and obviously it's the fight that I lost, is that I felt that before the whole thing had started, before training camp, it was just an uphill struggle knowing that you've got to lose 2.5 stone in 8 weeks, and knowing that you're going to have no power. You're gonna have. I mean, that night I didn't do a somersault into the ring.
Yeah.
And they changed up the gloves, and we didn't get the gloves while not even 20 minutes, 30 minutes before the fight. So everything that possibly could have went wrong in that fight went wrong. But again,
Did you still believe you were going to win though?
I still believed in my heart of all hearts that even though that I knew my fitness was not going to be right, and I knew the whole conditioning, and I knew that I was so weak, and I knew I had nothing in me, but to lose that much fluid before that fight, which was so dangerous, I knew it was just going to be a hard thing, but I felt within me, come on, you know, if you hit anybody, you can knock them out.
Yeah.
So surely, you're not telling me you're not going to hit this guy. And there's a few times where I did hit him, but the power was not there the way it is in normal fights.
Yeah.
So I still thought I was going to throw one certain shot and it was going to catch him and he was going to go. But obviously, when the 12th round came along, and then a few seconds before the 12th round ended, I realised that I wasn't. I'd realised that it was the first time in 21 years that I'd lost a fight.
That to me must have been crushing for you psychologically, because you'd gone through, as we said earlier, you kind of gone through childhood into adulthood as an invincible man.
Yeah.
And that was in your psyche as well. Yeah. And then all of a sudden that had gone. How did you cope with that?
Do you know when you say, I don't know how you just worded it, but for me personally, the minute that the fight had ended, well, I was on my feet. I'd never even got knocked down in the whole fight. There was a few shaky moments, I'm not going to say there wasn't. But I'd never got knocked down.
Yeah.
I'd never got cut. I never got smashed around the head where I thought, oh my God, you know what? I'm in trouble. So there wasn't one part of any of the fight where I thought, do you know what? I've really lost here. Even when he got the decision right at the end, I still didn't really think, you know, the only way that you really feel that you've lost in a sport of boxing, and I mean lost, I don't mean losing on points.
Mm.
I mean losing is when you get knocked the F out.
Mm. Mm.
When you're out, when you're looking up at the stars, when you're looking up and you're alone. And like I said, I've always said it's the loneliest place in the world. That didn't happen to me. When you get exposed to the point that you're deteriorated, you're no longer available to do anything in boxing, that was not me. I went through my career without getting an absolute beating, without being deteriorated, without having no mental scars. And then even coming back and winning the world title and saying, yo, I'm going to chill for a bit.
Mm.
So, as far as for me, and I'm going to be honest, I didn't feel like, oh, do you know what, how am I going to cope with this? I've got beaten. It was never, ever. I always said when I get beat by a guy, I was going to put my hands up. I was going to say, yo, you was better than me. And you're better than me tonight and tonight only. You're better than me as a fighter. I don't think you're nowhere near as better than me as a fighter. The fact is he was current, he was active. I wasn't active. I'd broke my hand before that prior. And he was just on the way up where he was just ready to take anyone, where I had to lose 2.5 stone and I drained myself and killed myself. And that's it. That's the be all and end all. Do I feel afterwards that I was really saddened by it?
Yeah.
You will not believe that losing only one fight, and from that one loss, I've still now and remain the same guy that when I got beat, the guy of having that sense of, who really cares? Yeah. So what? The guy never hurt me. The guy never knocked me out. I wasn't out. I've seen the greatest fighters that have ever lived. And there was fighters before me and there'll be fighters after me that get beat, but not get beat like that. I'm talking about getting really beat. So I've never ever been in a way thinking or felt sorry for myself and thinking, you know what? It's always affected the other people that wanted to watch me win so much. It's always affected them more that I've seen than me personally.
Is it because you mentioned the amount of weight you had to lose and everything else?
Yeah.
Do you blame yourself for that? Was that bad preparation from you? Were you not looking after yourself as well as you should have been?
No, I'm going to be honest. When I got the call saying that, look, there was a date, there was an opponent, I said there and then on the phone to HBO, look, this is going to be, it's going to be impossible to make the weight.
Yeah.
But I said, if you give me more money,
Right.
Then that's going to be cool in the gang, because you know what? I'll fight King Kong for the money I was getting that night.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that in boxing, of a carrot that dangles in front of every fighter before every certain fight. I look at fighters like Joe McClellan that I was a massive, massive fan of.
Yeah.
You know, and I realised that he had to lose some serious weight before that fight.
Yeah, yeah.
In 24 hours, I heard it was about 16 pounds.
Yeah.
and just look where he ended up, and bless him, what happened to him. So for me personally, you know, it was hard and everything else, but I never got hurt. I can always feel and know and remember the fact that I never really got hurt. Because when you get hit with one of them shots,
yeah,
I'm talking about one of them shots, one of them that is a oops upside the head. I said oops upside the head. That they're the ones that you really don't want to get hit by.
Yeah.
And thank God I went through my career. I'm not going to say I never got hit with nothing, but because I did take me a little fair share. I mean, the night that you just mentioned about Steve Robinson, I remember they said that I was that good that night. I mean, it was raining, and even the rain didn't hit me. I didn't get wet.
Brilliant. Can I throw... Oh, actually, here's another question. Just kind of... At the close of the 20th century... There was rumours about you and Floyd Mayweather fighting. I think Mayweather was super featherweight at that point, wasn't he? I think he just won his first world title at super featherweight. Was that fight ever close? And if it happened, no. Was it no negotiation started or anything like that?
No, they never ever negotiated. He was always the heavier. Before even looking at him for a glimpse at super featherweight, he'd moved up. And he'd another world title. Yeah. And then before even looking at him at lightweight, he'd moved up again and another world title. And he just kept moving up. And he obviously has won, like, I don't know how many world title belts, WBC belts at different weights. Yeah. So, but me and him was good friends from back in the day. And I used to see him in a way that I used to see him when I was just in America. And I think, obviously, I was in America in 97. He turned pro... So I'd been a pro for 2 years before I'd met him.
Yeah.
He just only turned pro, I think, in 96.
Yeah.
So at the time, I don't know if he'd only had so many fights, and he was like, how the hell are you coming from your country into our country?
Yeah.
And, and how are you on HBO? How are you being on Showtime? And how come you're getting all this whatever? And how come you're getting paid so much money and we aren't? But... he was always really friendly.
Yeah.
But that was the kind of vibe at first. And then obviously, all of a sudden, he's just not took everybody in boxing. He's took over the whole of sport. Because he's the highest paid sportsman in Forbes magazine for I don't know how many.
Yeah, last couple of years.
Yeah.
Would he still be unbeaten if you two had met back in, say, 98, 99?
I can't say that he would be. No, I mean, I was very, very confident. I was very, very powerful. I was very fast. I don't know, to be honest. I mean, he's overly skilled.
Yeah.
I mean, his skill is just immense. I mean, his defensive skills and what he's got off from being a kid is just unreal. Do I think he's possibly getting a little bit too old now? Do you know what? I have not really seen them signs that these people keep saying that he's on his last legs or...
Yeah.
You know, is it over? Should he only have a few more fights? Will and then they're saying is so many fighters like Manny Pacquiao, Amir Conor, whoever going to beat him?
Yeah.
Do you know what? It's going to be very, very hard to beat. It's going to be very hard to beat Floyd. But all of a sudden, there is people in the States that I've been listening to that I have heard about them saying that Amir Khan's got the style to beat him because he's never fought anybody with that style.
Yeah, yeah.
So. Yeah. And it's true, in the last 10 fights of his, he hadn't boxed anybody like Amir Khan. Amir's got some serious speed.
Yeah.
And if he can keep out the way...
I agree. I agree with you.
But then again, I'm going to be honest. Forget about Amir Khan fighting Mayweather. I want to see Amir Khan fight Kell Brook. And I'm not saying that because Kell Brook is a kid that used to look up at me at the age of 9 and 10... watching me in Sheffield because we was from the same gym. I just want to see that fight. I think the whole of the British public want to see that fight. I think everybody, you know, you've got two world-class fighters. Kell's been a world champion now from winning the IBF belt against a good fighter like Porter. You know, he's in his own country. Why don't you beat the best in your own country who's got a world title? Like, when we saw that big fight between... Carl Froch and George Groves.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a big fight.
Yeah.
A big fight.
Yeah.
Selling out Wembley. Well, you can't tell me that Amir Khan and Kell Brook can't sell out Wembley.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
I think that is a massive fight, and I think that Amir should fight him.
Yeah. What do you make of the whole...
Because Kell, I know, Kell Brook wants to fight him. He's dying to fight him.
Yeah. What do you make of the whole Mayweather-Pacquiao thing that's kind of seems to have been going on since you last fought?
It's been that long.
It feels like it.
It's been that long.
Do you think they should just fight and just or if
it's
we still don't know if it's going to happen. Apparently negotiations are ongoing, but it's one of them you believe it when you see it if it happens.
Do you know what? I don't care how long that fight takes to happen. I honestly feel in my heart of all hearts that's a fight that you desperately want to watch.
Yeah.
If you're a boxing fan and you love boxing, you always want to watch the best fighters fight.
Definitely.
And for me, of course it's long overdue. It's been long overdue for a long, long time, but do I still want to watch it fight? I think I'd definitely get on a plane to go and watch that fight.
Yeah, yeah.
I probably wouldn't go on a plane to watch any other fight than that fight. But that's a special fight, and I just think that them styles will collide. And it would make a great fight. So I'd want to watch it. So I think it will happen. Yeah.
That's good news, and we hope so. Let's just quickly talk. A lot of the questions were down to that we had from Twitter, were related to some rumored fights. We've mentioned the Floyd Mayweather. Also, the guy you kind of mentioned alongside a lot was Juan Manuel Marquez.
Great fighter.
How close to? Because he was your mandatory for a while, wasn't he?
He was my mandatory for a while.
Yeah.
And great fighter, but I would have thought that for me personally, it wouldn't have been at that particular time. It wouldn't have been that hard for me, I think, to beat him, simply because he had this coming in forward style, and I would have felt confident boxing him and boxing him all the way, and possibly hitting him with shots that he'd not been hit with. But I didn't get that opportunity, and my promoter at the time, he didn't want to take that route.
Yeah.
And I honestly feel it wasn't because he couldn't think that I could beat him. I just felt that that's what he wanted to do. You listen at the time to your managers, who's managing you, and you listen to your promoters.
Yeah.
And at that particular time, they said, you know...
And Mark, he wasn't a big name then either, was he? He's not like he is now. He's
he weren't no name.
So he's not
I
like
don't
he's
think
gonna.
He was a world champion. He never won a world title.
No.
So he wasn't anything. Obviously he is now. He wasn't anything like he is now in regards of experience, in regards of how he is. I mean, I still think he's a great fighter. When I watched him fight Floyd Mayweather, though, I honestly thought that it was going to be a little bit of a different fight. I thought that he
one-sided, wasn't it?
It was so one-sided. It was untrue. I thought that he would have pulled a little bit more out of the bag. But it just shows you, when he fought Manny Pacquiao, I don't know how many times he's fought him now, but one of the fights, he knocked Manny out cold.
Yeah, yeah.
So for a fighter to do that against Manny Pacquiao...
Yeah, exactly.
He's got to be bloody good.
Aselino Freitas... How close is that?
Aselino Freitas. We was trained by the same trainer.
Yeah.
So I had a trainer called Oscar Suarez at the time.
Yeah.
Sadly, he's passed away now, and he passed away a while ago. He had cancer, bless him. And he was an amazing trainer, by the way.
Yeah.
He taught me a lot. I felt I learned a lot from Oscar Suarez. Yeah. But directly after my whole thing was fizzling out, as in fighting... He seemed to immediately have Aselino Freitas as a fighter and to train him, and he did well with Aselino. As far as me and him fighting, that fight was never really on the cards. Again, he was heavier than me.
Yeah.
He might have been a super featherweight or a lightweight.
Right, but that was neat. There was never any offer on the table to fight him.
There was never ever any talk. He was a good fighter and a good puncher.
Yeah, no, he was.
A good fighter and a good puncher.
You mentioned, we're going to have to talk about the whole training situation. You mentioned Suarez there, and also you were Manny Stewart for a while. But are there any regrets about what happened with the Ingles at the end? I mean, I went up to Sheffield, I went to the gym, I think it was about 18 months ago, and... you know, I was with Dominic and Brendan and what have you, and they all, you know, they've all still got very, very fond memories of your time. And they spoke about you when you were young and everything like that. They also said that you reached a point in your career where you felt that training wasn't as important, or it wasn't as regimented for you. You were turning up at the gym late. What are your memories of that particular time? And just in your own words, just explain why that relationship fizzled out.
There's a real clear cut why that fizzled out, why it really had to end. I mean, at one point, if you'd have said to me, you know, who's like your second father, I would have said Brendan Ingle, because he spent a hell of a lot of time with me. I mean, I honestly felt he spent more time with me than with his own family, with his wife and his own sons and daughters. So we was very, very close. So when the time came along and I realised, he said to me, look, I'm... I don't even know if he did tell me. I think I found out that he was writing a book.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
And I don't know, it really, really hit me that somebody that you'd been with for a very, very long time, somebody that you'd put all your trust in, could write a book and a hell of a lot of negative things be about you in that book that wasn't true. And that you couldn't really work out why this person who you were so close to, that you regarded him as like family, would honestly want to do that. And I couldn't make no sense of it, why he'd want to do that, apart from earning some money from the book. And I just felt that I'd been with him all that time, you know, I'd made the gym proud for a very long time, winning everything as an amateur, you know, being the first world champion from the gym in Sheffield. The fact that he'd made his most amount of his living for him and his family from me. And obviously, I'm bearing in mind that he taught me as a kid, that when I walked in at the age of seven, he taught me. I'll never ever forget the time, like I said to you, that he spent with me. So it goes two ways. It does definitely go two ways. This isn't a one-sided thing. I just felt that the whole thing with the book really ripped everything up, and it took away that real trust. And I think because of that, I had to make a decision at the time, and I made a decision to invite him and John, his son. And like I said to everybody, I was really close to John. For me, John Ingle was my trainer as a kid and as a professional, and going through to win a world title and defending world titles. It was, for me, there was some kind of like mentally getting focused by a mentor from Brendan's side. But John Ingle played the biggest part, really and truly, throughout the whole of that. And I'll never forget John Ingle's days. And I still speak to him today. And I've been trying to contact them and been speaking to John it wasn't that long ago from now. Just saying, look, it's been way, way overdue.
That's good to hear.
It's been too long. It's me that's getting in touch with them and saying, look, I want to come down to the gym.
Yeah.
I'm wanting to come down from Surrey and just, you know, head down there. And I want to meet your dad. I want to make up with Brendan. And I really do want to make up with Brendan because it's stupid. You know,
life's too short, isn't it?
It's too short. And why the hell? But I keep talking to John, and John's not giving me no kind of indicators that, yeah, my dad will make up with you and my dad does want to meet you.
Yeah.
I'm not getting any of them. I'm not getting any of that. I'm nothing like that. So what can I do apart from asking all the time and keep ringing up?
No, that's fair comment. That's fair comment.
Sometimes there's things that are probably made to be left alone.
Yeah, I hear you.
And that's the way they are. I mean, me personally, even if you ask me, you know, in how many years' time or whenever, I will still repeatedly say the same thing. I would love to make up with Brendan and say, look, in everything that I've ever done, I apologise against you that you thought was wrong. I apologise. And, you know, I'm a father of three myself now. And I would love to make up with you.
It gives you a new perspective on things, doesn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, you grow up and you get older, you know, you have kids and, you know, so, but...
Was there any truth, though, in what they said, in that the training kind of became less important to you?
I don't think I felt the training became less important to me. I was still there for training. Was I there a bit late? I mean, I don't remember walking in late. I tell you what, in my gym, growing up, the main thing is you're in the gym while the sparring was going on. Because I remember the bit that I always used to love the most was the sparring, because it would mean me beating the crap out of somebody. No, I don't want to say it like that. And I was always in the gym ready for sparring. First thing I'd do when I get in the gym, I don't believe in warming up. I didn't do no kind of warm up, no nothing. I just go get changed and get straight in the ring. All I want to do is fight.
Yeah.
And that's it. Now, I don't believe that I entered the gym too late enough to spar. Yeah. So that was the main thing. Everything. I mean, if you'd asked me, you see, I'm a real, real honest guy, and I would say that as I got older, and as I was defending world titles, and as things, I suppose, I'm not going to say that the training became less important, because it never did become less important.
Did you take your skills for granted, perhaps?
I realised at a certain age that I had this immense punching power, and I'm going to be really honest, I just felt like that no matter who I hit, I was going to dismantle.
Yeah.
In any round, I was knocking guys out in the 11th round. If I wanted to, it tells you something about a fighter, if they can knock out guys in the early rounds, in the middle rounds, or even as late as the 11th round.
Yeah.
And if you've got that punching power and that punch resistance right until the 11th round, which I felt that I had, and I proved that I had, but regardless, it shouldn't never ever take anything away from you from training. I mean, if I had my time again, I probably would change in being a little bit complacent in training, mm-hmm. or turning up to training, or being a lot more professional. But I honestly believed in them days, I wasn't in no professional setup.
Mm.
You know, I was in a gym that all the time growing up was coming from this same gym. And in that same gym, there was always a lot of kids in the gym, and the gym was always packed. And there was always non-amateurs, then amateurs, and then professionals. And I always felt like that I was just one of many.
Mm.
I never felt that I was singled out.
Mm.
And I was going to be given this special coaching.
Yeah.
This is really and truly why I'm not worrying about Kell Brook, but I'm feeling Kell Brook and Kid Galahad and whoever, where they're going to go when they reach a certain point. But obviously, Kell's won a world title and he's proved himself, and he's got that, he had that ability and strength to win a world title and do unbelievably well. So there's not, in my eyes, there's no really question marks on Kell, apart from how long he wants to remain as a world champion.
Yeah.
But I never felt that I personally got that singled out attention where, I mean, I always said, look, why don't we go on training camp? Why don't we leave the gym?
Right.
We need to go to training camp. You know, I'm fighting in world titles. I'm defending world titles. You know, I should be with world-class sparring partners.
Yeah.
You know, we should be sparring to the head. And I wanted to do that for a long, long time. And the only reason that what Brendan said to me why we couldn't is that it was expensive, and that the expenses come off the top, which was going to make his money a little bit lower than he got. So he didn't want to take it that way. He was always talking about overheads. Brendan was a big thing about overheads, and why should we be paying stuff like that? And I was like, you know, we're fighting in world title fights, and, you know, we're happy on what we're getting, and, you know, we should be taking it a lot more serious than we did. And to be honest, leaving the gym, for me, was the best thing that I could have done at the time. simply because I got that individual, that one-on-one training then, and I met my trainer Oscar.
Yeah.
And he could not believe what I told him that I did from the age of 7 until when he met me.
So there's no regrets about leaving the Eagle Gym.
No, none
whatsoever. Because I think people presume that you might regret that now.
No. Yeah. I didn't regret that at all. In my eyes and in my heart, it was the best thing that I ever could have done. The one thing that I do regret is the terms we left on, the terms
of
we
course.
Split up. You know, I regret that the most, because when you've been with somebody so long and you know that family so well, you should never, ever have to feel within yourself that things got that bad. They can't bear to even look at you. They can't bear to talk to you, no matter how much you wanted to get in touch with them or talk to them.
Yeah.
That's how it was. And the worst thing about it, I feel that was possibly in Brendan's head because of money.
Yeah.
Where at the time, he was the most well-paid trainer on the planet.
Yeah.
And why couldn't he have been happy on what he was getting? I just felt, and it was just all wrong. It was just all wrong. And I never felt right at the time, and still now, that it was my fault. I just felt that I was up with certain circumstances that I had to make decisions on, and I made the decision that I felt was right, and that was leaving the gym.
Money causes a lot of problems, doesn't it?
Well, in boxing, it's always been there. Like I said,
when
different carrots are put in front of certain fighters and certain trainers, and you know, things change. In my eyes, though, I never felt that. I told you the whole breakdown of leaving, really and truly, was a book being written, the trust being broken.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there was complaints and there was fallouts about money.
Yeah,
so.
True. Okay, let's just kind of come in to bring it all to a close. It's been fascinating, by the way, and I really appreciate you doing this.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier on you go into the gym, you get changed, and you'd be running straight into the ring because you wanted to fight, you love fighting. There obviously came a point where that passion for fighting stopped because you stopped boxing, you went out on a win. There were comebacks after that last fight, there were comebacks rumoured almost on a monthly basis for probably about 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
How close were you to making that comeback?
I was never ever close.
Never ever.
It was just to, have people on.
Yeah.
Basically, it was just to get people excited. And do you know what? So many people's really excited.
Well, I'm sure if you say you could come back now, that they get excited.
Yeah. Well, I mean, would I love to come back? I probably would have loved, absolutely loved to come back, because it was something that you love to do and something that you're really good at and something that people love to see you do, and really people appreciated what you did. So for me, it was a situation where I felt, you know what, I just feel that I'm at a certain time in my life. You know, I stepped out of the ring at the age of 28, and you know, you says, where did it stop? Where did that passion, where did the whole thing really stop? And I suppose the last so many fights that I had, I could feel it creeping in. I could feel it creeping in, where it was just the fact of knowing that you've done something for so many years, and it was the same thing, and it was like it became, you know, you're just doing the same thing, and it just.
I wanted a rest. I understand that. I understand it.
I wanted a rest from it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I always said, from a very, very young age, I said, you know, when I get to 28 years old, I'm going to be one of the smartest fighters to say, you know what, I might be world champion and there might be a hell of a lot more money out there, but I'm going to say that it's done, it's finished, you know. Do I think they had the best years out of me? I think they possibly did.
Yeah.
Do I think there could have been more? Well, definitely, there could have definitely been a lot more,
yeah.
I think. But in my heart of all hearts, I'd already made my mind up 5-6 years ago before that point came.
Yeah.
So when that point came, at the age of 28, and after losing and taking a year out and then winning the world title, the fifth world title belt, I just felt like that, you know what, it's that time. My hands yeah. every time I'd hit did really hurt.
Yeah.
I'd have to have cortisone injections in my hand before the fights so I didn't feel the pain in the yeah. fight, so I could hit as hard as I wanted to. Doing that in every single fight before the fight, calling the doctor in and having cortisone injections in the back of your wrists, going into going into your hands with a needle bigger than this table that maybe you're sat on, it's not right. It's yeah. not right. And I just felt like, you know what, I've done something in the sport of boxing, I felt at the time, that was enough for me to say, you know what, guys, I've had a great time. I've enjoyed myself in the sun. You know, I've shined for many, many years. I'm out, yo.
Yeah.
I'm out. And that's it. I suppose the whole thing of getting and feeling the passion and not the love for the sport and not having I don't know, all of these things that a lot of people say, that wasn't really the thing.
Yeah.
That was the motivation of to get yourself out of bed when you're a multimillionaire and training in
Crosby's
home instead of training in a smelly old gym. It was just all rubbish.
Yeah. You do. This is the second time we've met, but you do strike me as someone who is very content in themselves, happy. Not a great deal of regret. Sometimes you meet people and you sense that they're spending too much time in yesterday. I don't get that with you. Do you know what I mean? Not at all. But what would be your biggest regret? Would it be what you've already spoke about the parting with Brendan, the manner of the parting with Brendan?
What would be my biggest regret?
In boxing. Yeah.
My biggest. Do you know what? I don't know if I've even got one. I don't know if I can justify myself one. If I can actually say to myself, you know, do you feel really that bad that you can actually say to yourself, do you regret that?
Yeah.
And for me, there isn't that. Yeah. I mean, I should have, if it's not more of a massive regret, I should have been wiser. I should have been wiser. In a way, before the Barrera fight, to say, you know what, you guys have been waiting for this fight and this moment.
Yeah.
You won't take this fight. I've been offering you this fight for years. Barrera won't fight me. Then all of a sudden, they knew their time had arrived. I was out, you know, I'd boxed Augie Sanchez, I'd broke my hand in the fight. It was a devastated knockout. You know, I said after the fight I wanted to fight Barrera. I said before the fight, Barrera and Morales won't turn up for that night. They won't fight before that one. So if I'd have been wiser and just stepped a little bit back and said, you know what, I'm not going to be shoved in a corner because of all this money coming my way, just because they're going to give you a paycheck that's going to be more than the heavyweights are getting.
Yeah.
Why should I... You know, why should I fight? The thing is, there was two things. It was the fact of saying, you know what, regardless in what condition I am, I will fight anybody. I'll fight. He was supposedly one of the pound-for-pound best fighters in the world, Barrera, that night I fought him. And for me, I wanted to prove that I was never, ever going to be told that, oh, you can't, you know, you've been given this certain great world champion while he was a world champion, while you was, and you wouldn't fight him. There was that aspect of it. And obviously, there was, like I said, the wise and clever part of saying, you know what, I'm literally not going to make the weight. And I'm going to be drained.
Yeah.
I'm going to kill myself. And I'm going to have no ammunition. So I'm going to say no. But I didn't say that.
Well, I think we all wish we could have been wiser at certain points in our lives.
Yeah.
I know I do, that's for sure. But anyway, that's a different subject.
But apart from that, I mean, I bet there's a lot of fighters in the world right now that would swap chairs with me.
Well, exactly. And moving on to the, let's finish this with the bright and brilliant news that you're being inducted into the Hall of Fame this year. That testament is testament to what you achieved in the boxing ring, the amount of people that you touched. Well, what does it mean to you, Nassim Hamed, International Boxing Hall of Fame inductee?
Oh, it means absolute everything. And you know when you say that it's a testament to you for what you achieved, I can honestly tell you, sat right here, I think it's a little bit more than that. I think it's a bit more than what I achieved. I think it's how I achieved it,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's, you know, how I fought, and I think it's about, you know, what kind of stuff I did, you know, fight week, in press conferences, you know, how I used to react when fighters used to say certain things, and obviously the whole colourful character, and that was so confident, that was in the sport at the time, that I believe was a breath of fresh air, and to me, it's, you know, when they first rang me up, the International Boxing Hall of Fame, they actually asked me for a quote. What, you know, what would you say? What, you know, we ask every inductee,
yeah,
what he says, you know, yeah, when he gets a call from us to say you're inducted into the International Boxing Hall of Fame. And I says, well, it's an absolute honour and it's amazing. And I says, you know, it's possibly a phone call that every fighter would absolutely love,
yeah,
and that would wait upon in getting, and not every fighter gets that call. And I just think, you know, getting inducted into the Hall of Fame in your own sport, so people know that you're set in stone for life, even though before even being in it, you were set in stone for life, knowing that people will never ever forget how I used to fight, you know, what happened in them fights, and you know how them entrances was, and how many people smiled and thought, do you know what, I really like that, I'll watch it again.
Yeah.
You know,
it was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. You know what, when we tweeted out earlier on saying that you were coming in and you were going to answer some questions, I think this is a good point to finish it on. Curtis Woodhouse just simply tweeted, what a fighter, be a long time till another Naz comes along, if ever, one of our best ever. And you know what, I'll second that. Naz, thank you so much for doing that, really appreciated it, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And thanks everybody for listening, we'll be back next week.
Peace.